Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great day today, Tuesday, September 17th. We've got a great show lined up for you. At 12:30, we're going to go to open lines. We'll talk about anything that you want to talk about. I've been receiving a number of texts from folks saying they really want more opportunity relative to open lines. So we are going to heed the call, and we will provide more time for folks to call in to opine on anything that you so desire, and we're willing to talk about anything. And so we'll do that at 12:30. We'll visit with J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, about the Sewage and Water Board meeting that they had yesterday, and we'll talk about that. Kevin Dolio, Director of Aviation for the Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport, joins us about the pump station at the airport and whether or not that contributed to problems throughout the system out there in the Kenner area. NOAA Coalition will visit with Josh Tatum. He is the Vice President of Retention and Growth at GNO Inc. They've got a number of activities coming up, and we'll report out on that in the 11 o'clock hour. And this first hour is open. Again, we are going to heed the call. We want to hear from you. Whatever it is you want to talk about, we'll talk about. Lot going on right now. You know, the most recent assassination attempt on the president, what's going on in Congress, where are we with the economy? How are you feeling? Well, how's your household budget working for you at this point in time? But I did want to start with this. In the debate, you know, we had the storm right after that. We didn't have an opportunity to really dig down into a lot of the issues of the debate. And so there's been a delay here, and I apologize for saying, but it is what it is. But during the debate, there was a question about crime in the United States. And David Muir fact-checked the president immediately and said, President Trump, as you know, the FBI says overall violent crime is coming down in this country. Well, that's not exactly what the FBI has said, and we'll explain why. But what they said in their most recent quarterly crime report that they revealed is that the January to March 2024 quarterly uniform crime report provides a preliminary look at crime trends for January through March 2024 compared to January through March 2023. And here is the qualifier: a comparison of data from agencies that voluntarily submitted at least two or more common months of data for January through March of 23 and 24 indicates that reported violent crime decreased by 15.2%. Okay, that's not the overall country, because the problem that we have is that not everyone is reporting data to the FBI. He knows it. Everybody knows it. Anybody with half a lick of a brain that has been reporting on these issues, and we know that according to Pew, according to almost every major poll, that violent crime is a very important issue, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, or otherwise, in this election and in local elections as well. High interest as to where we stand with crime. So everybody's been reporting on it. Everybody understands what is going on. And everyone who has been reporting on it, if they're truly objective and honest, recognize the failures of the reporting system that we have in this country. So, for example, I like to go to the local agencies. We go to the local agencies. We report the numbers out. For instance, in Jefferson Parish, we've done that because they have been in full compliance in reporting data to the FBI. Not all agencies in the state of Louisiana do. So to look at it from a state perspective, you're not going to get a complete picture. So the interesting thing is that several times when the FBI has released their national crime data, they couldn't say if crime went up, whether it went down, or it stayed the same. And they concluded that all three scenarios could be possible. Why? because of the gaps in the data collection. And they recognize that. And the FBI, appropriately so, this is not a criticism of the FBI, but the FBI has changed their reporting requirements in the hopes of getting more reliable and current data. But it hasn't worked out very well because it requires people, it requires agencies to voluntarily report. And they haven't. In fact, in 2021, 37% of departments stopped reporting crime data to the FBI, including large departments like Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, and other jurisdictions like Baltimore, Nashville. Crimes are being underreported. They're being undercounted. And this contributes to an incredibly large gap. The real crime data collected by the FBI in 2021 really only represented 63% of police departments, overseeing just 65% of the population. And that when compared to pre-2021 data, the result is a questionable decline in crime. Less reporting, right? So one of the other databases that are looked at historically is the National Crime Victimization Survey. And these this survey doesn't look at police stats. What it relies on instead is interviews of a representative sample across the country of about 250,000 people. And the information is collected and includes the frequency and the type of crime experienced, including crimes that have not been reported to the police. But they do leave some crimes out, like murder and some of the other categories. But what this data reveals, and the most recent completed data that's out there is 2022, is that only 42% of violent crimes, such as robbery or aggravated assaults, and 32% of property crimes, such as burglary, arson, are actually reported to the police. So that's why there's this disconnect here, is that people are victims, but they're not reporting. And if you don't have a good clearance rate in your jurisdiction, meaning solving crimes by arrest, or identity of the perpetrator yet to be arrested, what happens is that there is a direct correlation to the amount of crime that's actually reported in that geographic area. Why? Because people lack the confidence in their policing agency. So unless and until we get to a point where the data is more robust, more relevant, some level of a competency rate far greater than not quite two-thirds reporting, we can't really say for sure what is going on out there. And the fact that David Muir from ABC doesn't recognize or realize that and speaks with authority in such a definitive fashion to fact-check someone on that issue is disingenuous at best. Appropriately, and maybe one of the only times that Donald Trump actually handled the question in a halfway decent way, instead of saying the data is fraudulent, it's not fraudulent. The data is what it is. It's underreported. We don't have agencies across the country volunteering their information and providing it to the FBI. Plain and simple. It's not fraudulent. To his statement was fraudulent and misleading, but the data is not. The data is just incomplete. It's not all there. You can't draw that conclusion from that data, especially when you consider that a lot of the larger agencies don't report their crime to the FBI. So when the report is missing all kinds of data like this, you cannot draw these conclusions. And this is kind of the misleading strategy that's going on in the mainstream media to talk with such authority about this. And, you know, anytime you have 6,000 law enforcement agencies not reporting data, you know you have a problem. And this has been reported on by independent think tanks, by all kinds of folks on the left, on the right. This is not, you know, a biased opinion as to what it is, what it is. And what actually happened was in the year 2020, a vast majority of law enforcement agencies were included in the FBI's database because they accepted multiple ways of receiving this data from local law enforcement. And it changed in 2021 in that effort to modernize the system. The FBI stopped taking data from what was called the old summary system and only accepted that data through this new system in incident-based reporting that they were trying to do. And a lot of folks had a lot of difficulty with automating that process. And a lot of the smaller agencies have always had that challenge as well. So, but in the end, as I just pointed out, this is all about misleading folks. Because, as I said earlier, some of the largest police departments still having difficulty reporting data. And some just started again in 2022 and 2023. Some of the largest agencies, New York Police Department, L.A., a lot of the jurisdictions in New York, a lot of the jurisdictions in Pennsylvania, the majority of jurisdictions in Florida. Less than 10% of agencies in Florida and Pennsylvania are available in the national crime data. Now, there are many states, about 17, somewhere between 15 and 17, that have near-perfect submission rates. In fact, they've made it mandatory under state law, some states, to make sure that they reported that data. Why? Because they understand that it's incredibly important to do so. And unless and until that we make this mandatory in this country, we cannot draw these conclusions in such a definitive manner as David Muir tried the other night at the debate, knowing full well that the data is incomplete. Our own criminologist here for the city of New Orleans, Jeff Asher, says people will use crime data to say whatever they want. When you don't have the certainty of having nearly every agency reporting data, it means that you need a lot of literacy to be able to combat items that are being stated in bad faith. Which is exactly correct. Got a text here that says, you opine. Yet last week when you had Sheriff LaPinto on, I texted in and said, ask him about illegal immigrant crime stats. You did not. Why is that? Because I know that they don't collect crime stats that way. That's why. There's not a category for it. This country is not willing to try and quantify what that number is. And in fact, in a lot of states, they've made it illegal to ask about status. Do I believe it's an important category to be reported? Obviously so. Why? Because if immigration is such an important policy in this country, why would we not want all data around that certain demographic or sector of the population of this country? Right? The way that we could squelch bad information, propaganda, misinformation, or otherwise, is collection of the data. A lot of folks don't want the data collected. They fear the outcome. They fear that you will be able to connect the dots. They fear that what they have said for years are all wrong. It's another classic example of offender rates that are being talked about by people all the time, especially of the illegal population in this country, not recognizing that it's not apples to apples in comparison to citizens. citizens are not overlaid with a whole process of deportation threats and this and that and compliance here and compliance there, although it's not done in a robust way, but the threat is still there. Most folks that enter this country illegally recognize the fact, out of state, out of mind. Their approach as an offender is a little bit more exotic. They understand certain things that they have to do. They understand utilizing fake names, utilizing fake addresses, utilizing this, utilizing that in order to circumvent what they understand is an inefficient system that addresses their status in this country. So you're not comparing apples to apples. Everyone knows that. But we continue to talk in these sound bites to try and influence the public as to where we should be on this issue. How about we start with this premise? Why would we be willing to accept any additional crime from anyone who is not authorized to be in this country? When you think about military actions and folks talking about accepted casualty rates, are you okay with this? Are you okay with having an accepted casualty rate in this country, not knowing whether or not your ticket is ever going to be pulled because of the lax attitude that we have to border enforcement? I don't know about you, but I'm not. Why? Why should we? Why should we work as hard as we work and at the same time be asked to accept the possible casualty rate because we do not want to enforce the law? Think about that for a moment. Love to hear from you. Give us a call, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We'll go to the talk lines. We have Dalton. Dalton, you're up. What say you? Go ahead, Dalton. Dalton? All right, we're going to find Dalton. Let's go to Rich. Rich, you're up. What say you? Rich, are you
listening
there?
To the Trump? Yeah, Newell, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's a little painful listening to all Trump's playing going on. I'm just probably that policy. You want to talk about the debate? This election is about character, man. It's about who the people are. If you go back to the 2016 Republican primary,
Rich, let me ask you a question right there. You say it's about character. What about the character of the media? What about when they knowingly and intentionally fact check someone where they should know the frailties of the reported crime data in this country? You don't think that that matters at all?
Here's what matters. You got a guy up there talking about
eating dogs and cats.
It's
a simple question,
Rich.
It's a simple question. Do you think it matters? This was not Trump's splaining. This was about the mainstream media splaining. Okay? So let us not be confused. So you don't believe that the character of the media matters?
The character of the candidates are what we're trying to talk about. And if I were you, I would not want to talk about Trump either. But let's be clear here, man.
I don't. I've said exactly where I stand with Trump. I don't know how many times I have to say it, but that doesn't mean that I cannot be critical of the Biden-Harris administration or Kamala Harris and the deficiencies in her policy or otherwise. I mean, that's what's really confusing about the public, is that they believe that when you challenge a candidate on their policies and what they're saying and how it's misleading, that you're obviously only doing it for one purpose and one purpose only, to benefit the other candidate, and that couldn't be furthest from the truth. It's about holding people accountable.
If you think you are not highly partisan, You're delusional, sir.
I'm a Republican. I'm a Republican, but I am not a Trump fan. Never have been.
Well, Trump's, they're doing it every day on this show. Just remember this. Donald Trump was the chief architect of the racist lie that Obama was not born in America. Anybody remember that? Mm-hmm. Donald Trump was in the Grab 'Em by the Pee tape. Anybody remember that? Donald Trump mm-hmm. lied about bone spurs to avoid military service. Donald Trump has disparaged the military at every time.
You don't know that. You don't know that for sure, but I agree with you on the other points.
Okay, well, how about this then? He's been surrounded by felons like Manafort, Flynn, Bannon, Weisselberg. Trump U, shut down. Trump Foundation, shut down, both due to fraud. Trump Organization, CFO, in prison for fraud. Not once, but twice. Trump paid off a porn star, and he's a felon for doing it. So how long do you want to go here? I mean, you know, I could go on and on about this list. But the one that trumps it for me, to use a metaphor, is this election fraud nonsense, because that's exactly what it is. It's nonsense. Let's start with this. 2016 election. Trump said Hillary got 3 to 5 million illegal votes. Remember that? Well, he convened a commission after he said that. Mike Pence was the head of it. Kobach was on the commission. They met for months. You know how many illegal votes they found? None. Zero. Nobody
well, that's
charged.
Not true. They found,
it
they
is
found,
true.
They found it. No, they found illegal votes in the thousands, but not none. Wait a minute, Rich. In no area that would have changed the outcome of the election, I called it out for what it was. You don't have to. A lot of times it can be unintentional, right? It doesn't have to be intentional. But the reality is that I called him out for it. I didn't believe it ever. I never bought into that.
What about the 2020 election? I won in a landslide.
It's bullshit.
What about that one? Well, that disqualifies him, in my opinion. As a retired military officer, I will tell you this, man. I have voted for plenty of Republicans. If Chris Christie had won the Republican nominee,
where I'm mystified and confused right now, what are you trying to convince me of?
In my monologue,
I did not have one really pro-Trump statement other than to say in a half-baked way it was probably the only comeback that he hit the mark a little bit on. And I called him out. It wasn't fraudulent. It's that the data is not complete. I don't know how much more honest anybody can be about this. But this is the thing. The folks on the other side wear their feelings on their sleeve. You can't say anything about them because the fear that they have of what the ultimate outcome may be is so intense that they don't want to hear the truth about their own candidate. They don't want to hear the truth about what is being said out there. They don't want to hear the truth about anything. Their whole belief system is simply, we need to annihilate Trump. And that's okay, but that doesn't make your candidate, from a policy perspective or otherwise, any better. Any better.
My candidate would be the high school principal down the street if he was running against Donald Trump. Kamala Harris is not my candidate, but I'm going to vote for her.
She's your candidate. You're going to vote for her. I mean, come on. What are you going to wordsmith this?
You're going to vote for Donald Trump?
Let's be honest. I don't know who
you voting for.
I'm not certain. I'm not certain that this is a statement I have never made in my entire life. I am not certain that I'm going to vote in that election. As it stands right now, I am not certain, because I am having a difficult time squaring up intellectually what I know to be the truth and what is being spewed by both candidates here. I'm having a real difficult time squaring it up. It's why I had economists on yet last week talking about their plans. Neither one's plans make any sense. Neither one of their plans addresses the deficit. Neither one of their plans are going to bring us to prosperity. And so I am conflicted conflicted to the point where I don't feel good about putting either one of these people in this office that is so incredibly important. And you know what? I don't know of another time in my adult life that I felt that way about an election. And it's a sad commentary that this is the best that this country has to offer. So when we talk about disappointment, I am incredibly disappointed right now in both parties, because this is not the way, I don't believe, that this constitutional republic is going to survive and succeed in the way that we're going down this path right now. And both of these candidates just spewing, we're going to give this away, we're going to give that away, we're going to do this. Oh, the student loan discharge plan didn't work. Oh, let's change the rules in bankruptcy court, and let's change the way that we've addressed this for the last 20 to 30 years so that 2 days after somebody graduates and getting a master's in business administration, they walk into bankruptcy court and want to file bankruptcy to extinguish all of their student loans. Really? They have you know why they've always been tough on us? They never let you extinguish debt that you owe the government. I guess what's next is taxes, income taxes, they're a burden. They're really dragging down my quality of life. And because I'm making all these other expenses, I've run up my credit cards, I'm driving the nicest car that I've ever driven in my life, knowing that I'm facing all this debt, I'll just go do that and I'll go extinguish it. And then when you go look at the test that the court applies in these cases, they call it stringent. Right? This is a rigid standard known as the Bruner test. Is the debtor unable to maintain a minimal standard of living while making the payments on their student loan? Number two, has the debtor made a good faith effort to pay the loans? Number three, and is the debtor's situation likely to persist for a significant portion of the repayment period? You know, it's not asked here. Has the debtor voluntarily entered into too much debt in relation to their income? Wonder why that's not asked. Voluntarily entering into the debt which far exceeds their income, because we know that credit card companies will lend money to anybody at 29 to 32% interest. And we allow this to go on in this country every day, and then the taxpayers are the ones that are bailing these people out for making idiotic decisions. And then we're looked upon as pariahs because we don't have sympathy for them. We're not empathetic that they've made a bad decision after a bad decision after a bad decision. No problem. Taxpayers, collectively, they're wealthy. We'll bail them out. Forget about paying the government back. It's only government money. We're good at giving it away anyway, all day, every day. We want to make sure that relative to equity, we all end up in the same place. We may not have started in the same place. We may not have worked equally as hard. But what we're going to guarantee in this country, if we have to drag some down and lift some up, we're going to ensure that you're going to end up in the same space. You're for that? I'm not. We'll be right back. We were just talking about how we manipulate crime data for purposes of a political message. In fact, Joe Biden said at his most recent State of the Union address that the murder rate saw the sharpest decrease in history and violent crime fell to one of the lowest level in more than 50 years. The reality is neither one of that is true. Actually, some of the increases during the pandemic were absolutely incredible. But this is what we do know about solution rates of crime in this country. In 2019, violent crime had a solution rate of 38.2%. In 2022, 27.1%. Murder, 57.6% in 2019, 46.2% in 2022. That's the last complete data year that we have. Rape, 29.5, 20% in 2022. In 2019, aggravated assault, 44%, a 13.4% reduction, 30% on aggravated assault. Property crimes in 2019 solved at 11.4% of crimes, property crimes reported, 6.7% in 2022. Burglary, 11.2% in 2019, 9.3% in 2022. Theft, 11.7% in 2019, 6.1% in 2022. Auto thefts, 9.8% in 2019, dropped down to 6.6% in 2022. Solution rates precipitously dropping, and these are in cities 250,000 or more. So all your major cities in this country, that's the solution rate that they have. It has gone down. It's not going up. And when you incapacitate the impact criminal out there, what you typically see, especially as it relates to property crimes, a drop in that because of you locking them up. Let's go to Tom. Tom, you're up. What say you?
Yeah, well, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I just got two questions. Go back to the debate. The first question that Kamala had was, is y'all better off now or last 4 years? She never would answer that question. The other thing is I would like to know where she plans on getting the money for this $50,000 tax cut and $25,000 for people to buy a house. I don't know where the hell they're going to get that money from, unless they put more money in the bank there.
No, they're getting it from you. They're going to raise taxes.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And,
that's
you know,
make,
and the reality is that this bogus story of, you know, those that are make under $400,000 are not going to be taxed. Well, define those. Does that mean a married couple filing jointly each get $400,000? You know what? There's not an answer to that question right now. In fact, there
correct.
Are those within the IRS that believe that marriage the marriage exception is out the door. So if a married couple makes $408,000 or $412,000, that it may not apply to them, because each one of them doesn't get a $400,000 bogey where they are guaranteed by the Biden-Harris or Harris administration, if she's fortunate enough to get elected, that they're going to be exempt. Listen very closely to the words that are being used. Yes, sir.
Let me ask you a question. Do you honestly think that Kamala Harris is going to allow fracking and allow people to drill? They only allow 996... Only allowed 996 drilling permits, where Trump had over 1,000 permits.
Well, I think you highlight something that's very important. You know the old adage, there's more than one way to skin a cat, right? They may very well have a policy that says that we will embrace fracking. Fracking will be allowed. But then when we get into the regulatory morass, the bowels of the federal government, they'll tie individuals up from a regulatory standpoint from getting a permit for years on end, and they just give up. They walk away because it's not worth it in the end. It's costing them too much money. And they've accomplished what? The same outcome. They really haven't allowed drilling to the extent, or fracking to the extent, that otherwise, if you had favorable regulatory provisions and streamlined permitting processes and everything else, because if one person's gone through the permitting process successfully in a geographic region, why would it take another 3 to 5 years for the second person coming through to get the permit? Does that make sense to you? Doesn't make sense to me. But the fact of the matter is, they all realize that they can utilize the regulatory morass to hold this whole thing up, and they still accomplish the same. there's not an appreciable amount of fracking that's increased over what has been going on for years. They know that. We all know that. I think as much attention as that issue has gotten, she has no choice but to say that she continues to support fracking. And definitely she has no choice between now and November, because it could decimate the Pennsylvania economy if they took a stance, as Joe Biden said, that he would definitely eliminate fracking on day one. I think she may have said that at one point in time as well. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Josh Tatum, Vice President of Retention and Growth at GNO Inc. This is part of our NOLA Coalition segment. And in the back half of the 11 o'clock hour, Kevin Dolio, the Director of Aviation for the Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport, will talk about the pump station issues there, located on the northwest corner of the Louis Armstrong property, and the pumps that went out. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We were just talking about how we manipulate crime data for purposes of a political message. In fact, Joe Biden said at his most recent State of the Union address that the murder rate saw the sharpest decrease in history and violent crime fell to one of the lowest level in more than 50 years. The reality is neither one of that is true. Actually, some of the increases during the pandemic were absolutely incredible. But this is what we do know about solution rates of crime in this country. In 2019, violent crime had a solution rate of 38.2%. In 2022, 27.1%. Murder, 57.6% in 2019, 46.2% in 2022. That's the last complete data year that we have. Rape, 29.5%, 20% in 2022. In 2019, aggravated assault, 44%, a 13.4% reduction, 30% on aggravated assault. Property crimes in 2019 solved at 11.4% of property crimes reported, 6.7% in 2022. Burglary, 11.2% in 2019, 9.3% in 2022. Theft, 11.7% in 2019, 6.1% in 2022. Auto thefts, 9.8% in 2019, dropped down to 6.6% in 2022. Solution rates precipitously dropping, and these are in cities 250,000 or more. So all your major cities in this country, that's the solution rate that they have. It has gone down. It's not going up. And when you incapacitate the impact criminal out there, what you typically see, especially as it relates to property crimes, a drop in that because of you locking them up. Let's go to Tom. Tom, you're up. What say you?
Yeah, well, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I just got two questions. Go back to the debate. The first question that Kamala had was, is y'all better off now or last 4 years? She never would answer that question. The other thing is I would like to know where she plans on getting the money for this $50,000 tax cut and $25,000 for people to buy a house. I don't know where the hell they're going to get that money from, unless they put more money in the bank there.
No, they're getting it from you. They're going to raise taxes.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And, the reality is that this bogus story of, those that make under $400,000 are not going to be taxed. Well, define those. Does that mean a married couple filing jointly each get $400,000? You know what? There's not an answer to that question right now. In fact, are those within the IRS that believe that the marriage exception is out the door. So if a married couple makes $408,000 or $412,000, that it may not apply to them. because each one of them doesn't get a $400,000 bogey where they are guaranteed by the Biden-Harris or Harris administration, if she's fortunate enough to get elected, that they're going to be exempt. Listen very closely to the words that are being used. Yes, sir.
Let me ask you a question. Do you honestly think that Kamala Harris is going to allow fracking and allow people to drill? They only allow 996 drilling permits, where Trump had over 1,000 permits.
Well, I think you highlight something that's very important. You know the old adage, there's more than one way to skin a cat, right? They may very well have a policy that says that we will embrace fracking. Fracking will be allowed. But then when we get into the regulatory morass, the bowels of the federal government, they'll tie individuals up from a regulatory standpoint from getting a permit for years on end, and they just give up. They walk away because it's not worth it in the end. It's costing them too much money. And they've accomplished what? The same outcome. They really haven't allowed drilling to the extent, or fracking to the extent, that otherwise, if you had favorable regulatory provisions and streamlined permitting processes and everything else, because if one person's gone through the permitting process successfully in a geographic region, why would it take another 3 to 5 years for the second person coming through to get the permit? Does that make sense to you? Doesn't make sense to me. But the fact of the matter is, they all realize that they can utilize the regulatory morass to hold this whole thing up, and they still accomplish the same. There's not an appreciable amount of fracking that's increased over what has been going on for years. They know that. We all know that. I think as much attention as that issue has gotten, she has no choice but to say that she continues to support fracking. And definitely she has no choice between now and November, because it could decimate the Pennsylvania economy if they took a stance, as Joe Biden said, that he would definitely eliminate fracking on day one. I think she may have said that at one point in time as well. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Josh Tatum, Vice President of Retention and Growth at GNO Inc. This is part of our NOLA Coalition segment. And in the back half of the 11 o'clock hour, Kevin Dolio, the Director of Aviation for the Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport. We'll talk about the pump station issues there, located on the northwest corner of the Louis Armstrong property, and the pumps that went out. We'll be right back. Stay with us.